So hello, it's Clive DeCarle here with the Health Revolution, and I'm extremely pleased to be joined by G. Edward Griffin, who last year at the Anarcapulco conference here in Mexico, I felt was by far the most coherent and interesting speaker of everybody. And I mean, the whole room was gripped, actually. I thought your talk was fantastic.
Thank you.
And of course, Ed is famous for writing the sort of seminal book on the Federal Reserve, called The Creature from Jekyll Island, but I first heard about you because of the vitamin B17 and its ability to reverse cancer. And I'd love if you could talk a little bit about that, because I think it was groundbreaking. You must have saved an awful lot of lives.
Well, I'm happy to report that's true. When I started into that topic, I had no idea what I was getting into. I knew nothing about health. In fact, that project probably saved my life.
Oh.
Because if I hadn't done that project, I wouldn't have learned about the things that I'm going to mention in just a moment. I wouldn't have realized that health was something that I had any control over. I always thought you got sick because you were unlucky.
Hmm.
You won the unlucky ones. I never really focused on that. I had something to do with that. And so I would have continued in the lifestyle that I had at that moment, which would have certainly put me in the grave by now. That's all I'm saying. So anyway, when I started into that task, it was because of a friend of mine who was a medical doctor, an MD in San Francisco, who started to use an alternative treatment for cancer. And by alternative, I mean that it was not approved by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration here in the U.S. And so if it's not approved, you're not allowed to use it. It doesn't make any difference if it cures cancer. It's not approved, you see. And in order to be approved, you have to go through a very long and expensive process that takes many millions of dollars. And until you do that, well, then you can't use it. And so I didn't know any of that at the time. But my friend, Dr. John Richardson, asked me one day if I would help him. He said he was coming under fire from the local medical association and the media for using something that was unproved, untested, and so they were calling him a quack. And of course, this is one of the most principled men you'd ever meet, and he was saving lives for the first time in his medical practice. But they didn't care whether he was saving lives. They were sure that he was lying about that or something. He was a quack. He asked me if I would help him write an article that he could have published somewhere to explain what he was doing, why he was doing it, and why we think that this substance was working. I said, sure, John, I'll do that. I had no idea of what I was getting into because, as I said, to me, medicine was something for those big heads over there. They went to medical school. They figured it out. And if I got ever sick, if I was unlucky enough to get sick, why, I would go and find a doctor, and then I would do whatever they told me to do, and that was the end of it. Well, I had no idea what I was getting into. So, yes, I'm sure it saved my life because I discovered that in this process of learning what he was using and why he was using it and how they think it works and so forth, I had to learn a lot about the orthodox view of cancer and why it doesn't work. I didn't know it didn't work, actually. I thought they wouldn't be using it if it didn't work. But I found out that they were using it, but it didn't work. The percentage of recovery was less than 1%. And when they said, well, we got a 5% recovery rate, you find out that they were lying about the numbers. And I mean literally lying about the numbers. And I said, you mean this is a failure, and yet I have to use it because if I use anything else, it's called quackery? And so my head is reeling as I get into this. So I don't know if I wandered off the track of your question of telling you about what happened to me, but that's how I got into it. And so as I dug deeper and deeper, I found out that the science of cancer was relatively simple once you understood what these technical words meant. Yet, as a neophyte like myself, I had no background in this. I had to rely on the doctors like Dr. John and other, there are a lot of doctors out there that were doing similar things, and researchers, even some people in the National Health Institute that were really on board with all of this. So this was not just one little guy out there just doing something wacko. There was a whole community out there, very high-powered, well-trained medical professionals that agreed with Dr. John. So I became their student. I followed them around asking them questions, and usually they just hand me a book and say, read this. So I found myself reading some medical books, which I would never have attempted, with an encyclopedia and a dictionary in one hand and the book in the other. I'm thinking, what does this word mean? Oh, I see, enzyme. What is enzyme? I heard about it. What is that? And so forth. So I learned a lot from my mentors who were really qualified to speak on this topic. And so I discovered that there were two views of cancer. There's the orthodox view, and then the alternative or the unorthodox view, which my friend held. The orthodox view is the one that is held by most doctors even today, and that is that cancer is the disease, and it's represented by the lump or the bump. And since that is the disease called cancer, obviously the solution is to get rid of the lump or the bump. And you do that either with surgery to cut it out, or radiation to burn it out, or chemotherapy, which is to poison it out, kill it with poison. And so that's what all orthodox cancer therapy is aimed at, is to burn, cut, or poison the tumor and get rid of it. And then, so if the tumor diminishes or disappears because of that, the doctor says, ah, see, we got it all. We got it because it's not there anymore. And of course, it comes back in most cases. Statistically, it returns. That's because the answer, I believe, is held by the alternative doctors who look at the tumor and they say, that's not the cancer. That's the symptom of the cancer. The real cancer is what caused that tumor to grow. That's what we want to treat. Not the symptom, but the cause. And this is at the heart of most medical dilemmas in the world today. Most of modern medicine, orthodox medicine, treats symptoms, not interested particularly in causes. And we could come back to why that is, but there's an economic reason there. But they treat the symptoms and not the cause. So I discovered that that was a huge enlightenment to me. It was a big red pill for me. So I discovered that the science of cancer therapy was pretty simple. And basically, the science is, I think we lost our frame there, but anyway, I just happened to notice that, by the way. Yeah. And that is that the science of cancer therapy is that we have to treat the body. The body will take care of the cancer if you give it the necessary fuel, basically, and keep it from being subjected to too many harmful effects. But primarily, the body has the ability to control cancer. As a matter of fact, cancer is not really a disease at all. Cancer is a process, the healing process, actually, that has gone awry. If I scratch my skin right now, okay, probably thousands or millions of cells have been removed. And probably already my body is reacting, unknown to me, with chemical signals and electrical signals. Our body is loaded with electrical signals, saying, cells have just been destroyed. We must repair. We must heal that. And so that triggers a whole lot of things I learned about. The body comes rushing in to heal this damage that was done there. And I won't go into it. It's an amazingly complex but beautiful mechanism. It's complex, but it starts to work, and the cells start to reform. They come from these what we now call stem cells that the body provides, and they start to regenerate into whatever cell is necessary. They're what they basically call the diploid totipotent cells, because in their raw form they can become anything. Totipotent means totally potential to reach any, to become any cell. They're diploid because they got two chromosomes in them. So that's the technical word for it. I had to learn what that meant. But once I understood it's just one of those stem cells that can become any cell that has been destroyed. Oh, now I understand it, you see. So that process is going on right now, and skin cells are being created to replace the damaged ones. So now, when that process reaches completion, there are other signals that go to work there and say, okay, end of project, stop healing, stop growing new cells. Now, if for some reason, and we'll come to that in a second, that those signals don't get through to stop, well, then they continue to grow and grow and overgrow. And the first thing you know, we have the lump, or the bump. We call it cancer. And what it really is a breakdown of the healing process that everybody has. It's a part of the normal mechanism of living. We would be dead if we didn't have the healing process, but that process goes awry. Why does it go awry? What causes it to do that? And that's what the alternative doctors are interested in. And usually, in a very simple oversimplification, it's because the body is being denied something that it needs, like a micro element of some kind, to... It's part of the electrical and part of the chemical signaling process. But usually it's a deficiency of something. Well, deficiency of what could that possibly be? Well, in this case, Dr. John was treating cancer on the assumption that it was a deficiency of a substance found in nature called amygdalin. It's a chemical. It's found in about 1,400 edible plants. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Amygdalin. And the only trouble is that it's bitter. And so systems, cultures, societies that have affluence do not like bitter foods. They don't have to put up with bitter foods. They process their foods. They can spend more money for real foods and put sugar to it. And they can boil it and cook it and destroy it and make it taste good. But in the process, they destroy the amygdalin, this little molecule of amygdalin. And that is why, I found out, that cancer is highest in the most advanced nations. It's because the diet in the primitive societies, like Hunza, you know, in northwest Pakistan, the Aboriginal Eskimos, the Hopi and Navajo Indians, the Vilcabambas, you look around the world where the cancer is unheard of, or very, very rare, in every case, you look at their native diet, and lo and behold, it's loaded with this thing called amygdalin, but it's bitter. But because they're poor societies, they have to eat it. They don't have a choice. But you get them out of there, and they go to Los Angeles, New York, or London. Oh, I go to the restaurants. We don't have to have bitter foods. And they buy foods that have been selected against amygdalin. And the more you go in that direction, the higher the cancer rate goes. Now, that's just circumstantial evidence. But it was very convincing because I found that to be true in all the cultures of the world that I examined. Those countries with the lowest cancer rates had the highest amygdalin in their diet. But I'll stop this in just a minute. I've got to complete this explanation to your question. The ultimate test is to examine what this molecule amygdalin is and how it works. Now, what it is, it's made up of four parts. Got two parts of glucose, or sugar, and one part of benzaldehyde, and one part of cyanide. Now, that word cyanide was used by the opposition to this alternative therapy to scare people away from it. They said, look, it's got cyanide in it. You crazy? There are quacks that would recommend cyanide to treat your cancer, right? Stay away from those people. They're wacko. They're killers. And the public says, oh, yeah, cyanide. Oh, we don't want anything to do with that. Well, let's take a look at that. What is cyanide? Well, it's a gas. It's a gas. So this substance called amygdalin did not have a gas in it. It had a cyano something. And then the gas was combined with something else. And so it was not a gas. It wasn't pure cyanide. It was cyano something combined with other components. What? Well, let's take cyanide combined with something else. What could that be? Well, vitamin B12 is interesting because they call it cyanocobalamin. Vitamin B12 is loaded with cyanide, and we would be dead without it. And that's the trick, you see. They try to scare people away because it's got cyanide in it. Well, cyanide is in a lot of foods, and it's a good thing it's there, because without vitamin B12, we'd be dead. So you could say that cyanide in nutritional components is a life-necessary element, which indeed it is. And it's in this healing process of amygdalin. So the question is, what releases the cyanide and the benzaldehyde too? Because that is very toxic, the benzaldehyde. You put the benzaldehyde and the cyanide together, they're more than twice as toxic as each other. So you're dealing with a very dangerous substance. So why would you eat that? Well, the question is, what would release those? What would unlock that molecule and release those toxic elements? And the answer is, it's an enzyme. It's called beta-glucosidase, in case anybody wants to look it up in the encyclopedia. Beta-glucosidase, it is the enzyme cracking, the thing that cracks that enzyme and releases these toxic components. So you better be careful with that one. Where do you find that? Well, I'm glad you're sitting down, because you find it in cancer cells, and primarily only in cancer cells. So there you have, oh my gosh, if you understand the mechanism, you see it's a beautiful mechanism of nature that couldn't have been accidental. It's part of the natural healing process. It's part of the mechanism that stops the healing process as when you reach it. Now, if you have this enzyme in your system, and which all cancer cells do, so once you go beyond the healing process and they become more than the healing process, now they start to develop that enzyme. And so now the amygdala comes along, the enzyme releases the toxic elements, and they commit suicide. Cancer commits suicide in the presence of amygdala. It's that simple. And this is no mystery. I found this actually in the textbooks. It's not a secret. People deny it. They say, that can't be true. But it's been known for decades how this works. I found it in a big section on enzymes. Anyway, I've probably talked much more than I should have in answer to your silly question here. About, well, where do you stand on this? I went into too much detail, but in essence, that's what I discovered. And it was one of those red pills that just blew my mind. I knew nothing about this before. So naturally, when you start talking about this, people will say, well, don't listen to him. He's one of those crackpots. You know, he actually thinks that if you just eat apricot seeds, you could cure cancer. And apricot seeds, of course, is a great source of amygdala. So, yeah, that's true. That's what I honestly believe. But they can make fun of it because they either don't know about it or they don't want anybody else to know about it. Why wouldn't they want anyone else to know about it? Because if it were known that you could control cancer with a simple substance that's found in nature that would cost probably no more than salt on the table, it would be that cheap, what happens to this $1 trillion cancer industry? They're all out of work. And this cannot be allowed. This cannot be allowed. So the object of the medical profession is to treat cancer, keep people alive, but never cure it. Because in treating it, it's very profitable. But in curing it, you put yourself out of business. And so that's what I learned when I started down this path. I discovered that the science of cancer therapy is not nearly as complicated as the politics and the economics of cancer therapy. And there it is in a nutshell.
Yes, well, sad, but absolutely true. And how long ago was it that you wrote the book?
Let's see, I think that book was published in 1974. Yeah. I started down that path about 1972. I thought it would take me a couple of weeks, you know, to write the article for Dr. John. Well, it took me a couple of years. And I'm still learning about it, by the way. It's a big topic.
Well, quite. I mean, you know, the first time I saw terminal cancer reversed was about 33 years ago, no, about 32 years ago, and that was at the advice of Linus Pauling, who was recommending 35 grams of vitamin C on a daily basis, spread out, of course, you'd get diarrhea if you took that all at once.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so it seems that vitamins of various types are absolutely crucial, as are, of course, things like iodine and magnesium. And
oh, yes, and some lots of trace minerals and things. So the trick is not just amygdala. That happens to be what Dr. John was treating patients with. But he also administered a broad spectrum of nutrition and enzyme supplementation, too. And yes, and we find that it's the body that holds cancer in check. It's the body. And so what we have to do is just fuel the body and say, go do your stuff, body. What do you need? You need vitamin C? Do you need amygdala? Do you need vitamin D3? You know, what is it you need? And we got to figure that out and see what you're deficient in. We give you that, and then the body says, thank you very much, and there goes the healing process back under control.
Yeah, I mean, we're incredible, aren't we? We are self-healing mechanisms.
We are self-healing if we give our bodies the fuel. We can't run the engine without the gasoline.
Well, quite. And so you're now 87, and clearly in top physical and mental health.
87, yeah, I keep forgetting that.
That's pretty good going.
It's pretty good going.
Yeah. So, I mean, let me ask you, are you supplementing on a daily
basis? Oh, absolutely,
basis?
Yes, absolutely.
So, can I ask what your regime is?
Well, my regime is very simple. And by the way, I'm not one of those fanatics about this. My wife tells me, you've got to be more, careful. You've got to be more consistent. But in spite of that, I probably take ground-up apricot seeds a couple of times, like a teaspoonful or half a teaspoon, sprinkled on my cereal.
Yeah.
Or some on a piece of bread or on a salad. Apricot seeds are very, very bitter. You're not going to like them. But you can take, I eat them often just one at a time. I say, poof, that was bitter. I have another one, you know. It's not too bad.
They seem to vary a lot with freshness. You know, I get the apricot seeds from the Hunza.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're fresh, they taste lovely. And if they're not quite so fresh, they've got that sort of marzipan
sort
of taste.
Well, they do make marzipan out of apricot seeds and or bitter almonds, which have a similar chemistry to them. And by the way, the Hunza seeds are not as rich in amygdalin as a California seed.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the California seeds are more bitter than the Hunza seeds.
Oh, that's perhaps why I like the Hunza ones.
They're sweeter. They actually call them sweet, but they're not. They're still bitter. So anyway, I sprinkle the ground seeds on my food. Often I'll just eat the straight seeds. It's okay. I get used to it.
It's not that bad.
No. And then once in a while, I'll reach in the cabinet and pull out a bottle of amygdalin, purified and concentrated. I'll get a 500 milligram tablet and just take it now and then. An average seed will have anywhere from 3 to 7 milligrams. So when you take a tablet with 500, you're getting a lot more of it.
Yeah.
And normally I don't think people would be interested in taking those 500 milligram tablets unless they had a case of cancer, you know, then they might be interested. But if just maintaining your health, I believe that I just apricot seeds now and then, it's just fine.
And around the world, the amygdalin tablets, are they easily available? Or have they tried to ban them?
They've tried to ban them. And in the United States, for example, you're not allowed to sell apricot seeds or amygdalin for cancer. You know, the minute you put the word cancer on it, boom, they come down and say, that's unproven, untested,
sure.
So you're a quack, you violate all the laws, you go to prison.
Well, you're threatening their monopoly.
They never say that, of course, but that's really behind it, in my view. So it's illegal. You can still buy them as long as it's not for cancer,
yes,
which is the primary reason you want to buy. So you have to play games. That's a shame to live in a system where you have to play such games in a field which is so vital to your existence, your health, your longevity. You have to live in a system that causes you to support a lie.
Well, quite. I mean, there's only one real problem in the world. It's run by psychopaths, and it's the psychopaths who are making these decisions.
Well, they're making these decisions. Now, I want to make it very clear for this recording. I'm not saying that all the doctors and nurses and people in the cancer field are conspiracy. They're not conspirators, not doing this. Most of them have no idea about the truth of what I'm saying. They've been through school. They were taught in medical school and in nursing school that... Not this. They've been taught that what I'm saying is quackery. And they really believe it. And you can tell that because doctors die from cancer just like everybody else. And nurses. My wife, by the way, is a registered nurse. She had this bias. But once she saw what I was learning and saw the chemistry and really talked to some of these researchers, she made a complete flip. But it's hard for a nurse or a doctor who's been programmed with this other information and they trust the schools and they trust the journals as authorities, that they know about this. So there's no reason for them, they think, to question that because they don't know about this economic factor that's hidden in the background. So I'm not saying that these people are conspirators because they are the victims as much as we are. But those at the very top in the pharmaceutical industry that are deliberately hiding information that I'm talking about or deliberately concealing the truth about the toxicity of their drugs and they doctor the evidence, they will tell you how awfully toxic it really is. Those people are criminals. There are very few of them. But they need to be brought to the table of justice, I think, because they're causing the needless death of millions and millions of human beings.
Well, yes. And it's interesting, isn't it, the word they've doctored something.
Doctored something, yeah. That's an interesting idea, isn't it? In this sense, it implies they're concealing something.
Yeah, doctoring the books.
Yeah, doctoring the books, yeah.
So I asked you earlier about your own regime. Apart from the apricot kernels, what else do you take for your health?
Oh, well, all right. I'm not holding myself out as the great paragon on this, but since you asked, I take the kernels and occasionally the Miglin tablet. I take a broad-spectrum vitamin and mineral. I mean, a good quality one, not the cheaper ones, but the more expensive ones. And I'm the first to admit, expense doesn't necessarily guarantee quality, but lack of expense usually guarantees lack of quality. So I find the best quality I can find, and I take those regularly. I take a product that is called Soul. It's a crushed seeds. It's seed oil and crushed seed, and it's loaded with all kinds of nutrition. It really, I believe, helped me overcome my case of shingles I had a few years ago. Nothing else seemed to be working when I started taking this Soul product. And then I have something called Cardio Miracle that I take every day. And that is a product that is a precursor to the body's generation of nitric acid. Nitric acid is something that we produce in our bodies more when we're young than when we're old. It causes the blood vessels to be flexible. And as we get old, the nitric oxide level goes down, the blood vessels get harder, and then they start to rupture. And then the body, again, back to the body, starts to cover the ruptures with minerals, including cholesterol. And we say, the cholesterol, we've got to get rid of the cholesterol. And if we got rid of the cholesterol, we'd bleed to death. It was there to patch up the hole. And medicine is... It's so off base on so many things I discovered.
It's childish. It's like a five-year-old making logical decisions.
Yeah, and they're coming around now to realize that the cholesterol is not the victim. I mean, not the big. It's not the cause of the problem. It's sort of a symptom again. And so I take this Cardio Miracle, which lowered my blood pressure from what was a horribly high. I thought 170 over. God only knows what, but now it's down, Nori, around 120. It's like kind of young man, blood pressure again.
And that probably would have been an L-arginine or citrulline.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly what it is. It's the arginine, L-arginine, and citrulline, and other minerals and vitamins sort of thrown in to make it a rich antioxidant environment. You're exactly right on target. And a lot of fresh fruits, ground up, and not ground up, but... I guess dehydrated in a certain way so you don't destroy their enzymes and all that kind of thing. It gets kind of beyond my understanding. All I know is that it brought my blood pressure down. Bingo, like that.
Oh, very good.
I'm convinced. And then finally, since you asked, I take a product called, the brand name right now is Recharge, but it's the chemical is cycloestrogenol. Cycloestrogenol is, I guess they call it a precursor to... Let me think for a minute. I wasn't prepared to talk about this, but let me just put my brain in gear on that. It's a telomere stimulator. It's an enzyme to cause the cells to produce telomeres, and the telomere is that little thing on the end of our DNA. It's like a cap. Some people say it's like the cap on a shoestring, you know, because it kind of looks like that. It caps it. And the reason that's interesting and important is because it's known, this is known science, that as we get older, we lose little pieces of these telomeres on the end of our DNA. And the shorter it gets, the more prone we are to damage to the DNA itself. And if it gets really short, little pieces of the DNA start dropping off and getting chunked off. Well, when that happens, we start to age. We get wrinkles and we get pains and aches and all kinds of. We just start to fall apart. We're coming into the final station, you know?
Yeah.
And so the telomere length is considered to be very, very important because it sort of protects the DNA from crumbling and being chewed apart. So anything that can cause the cell to regrow that, by the way, that is automatically grown in the stem cells. That's why they live. The stem cells can live, I mean, as far as we know, forever, as long as it has nutrition. But all other cells, the telomeres get shorter and shorter. So, and the reason they think that the telomeres grow on the stem cells is because the stem cells produce the enzyme that causes the telomeres to grow longer. I think it's called telomeron or something like that. Telomerase, yeah. And so here we have a substance that stimulates the production of telomerase in all the cells. Well, it's kind of a theoretical thing, isn't it? I'm not trying to say that I know 100% that this is what's working. I looked at that science, and I looked at the laboratory tests that they did. They were pretty convincing on mice and so forth. I said, what have you got to lose? Unless it was toxic and we didn't know about it. So I was very cautious when I went into it. This was about 5 years ago now, maybe 6 years. And so I take that, and that's about it. Oh, I try and exercise. I exercise pretty, for my age, pretty good, at least 5 times a week. Sometimes 6, never 7. And that's it.
And so the cycloestrogenol, I forgot the word right, this is presumably the astragalus.
It comes from the astragalus.
Is it TA65?
Yeah, that's the first brand name for it, TA65. Yeah. And then one of the doctors that was working with that, Dr. Park, produced his own product, which as far as I know is identical but less expensive.
Well, that's good. The TA65 is ludicrous.
Horribly expensive. Mm. And the recharge is still very expensive. Ah. It's not El Cheapo. Mm. But,
life is, you know, if you can afford to pay for health, it's worth neither, every penny.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's really not cheap is terminal cancer. Destroy your life savings. So you have to weigh those factors.
Well, quiet. And so perhaps you could talk very briefly about some of the other things that you do, because I know you have this fabulous Red Pill Expo. And
well, thank you for that. Yeah, I'd love to talk about the Red Pill Expo, because as your listeners probably have figured out by now, that what I'm talking about is kind of weird. I mean, it's not mainstream information or viewpoint. And there's a tendency for all of us, myself definitely included, when we hear something that's totally different from everything we've been hearing, and have accepted as truth, we tend to say, that's absurd, because surely we would have heard about it by now, you know? Well, it turns out that just about everything now that I hold to be true in the most important areas of my life, like health, for example, and I did a study on the Federal Reserve System, which is the banking system. Oh my gosh, that was just the opposite of what I thought. And everything that affects my life in a very profound manner, I've discovered, is different from what I thought. So it behooves me and everyone else to say, wait a minute, my first reaction to that being absurd, put that aside, if you can, and just take an objective look at it, look at the evidence, look at the perhaps the hidden motives behind the people who are promoting the object. Do they have are they motivated to lie or to bend the truth a little bit? What's in it for them? And consider all those things. Not that you have to be, you know, like, what's the word, a cynic. But I like to think being a skeptic is pretty good. So if you look at all these new ideas with a certain amount of skepticism, but open-mindedness nevertheless, I can guarantee you, you're going to discover some truths that you had previously thought were impossible. And that's what the Red Pill Expo is all about. It's based on the meme from the movie The Matrix, in which the red pill was offered. You take the red pill, it clears away all the illusions in your mind and you see reality the way it really is. But if you want to go back to your illusions because they're more comfortable, which in many cases they are, you can take the blue pill, and that puts you right back to sleep, and you're happy, but you're not living in reality, and you're not fulfilling your life. So I thought that was a pretty good analogy. And so we have adopted that meme as the identity for our expo, the Red Pill Expo. Come and look at all the red pills that are being offered. I'm sure that they're not all valid, but we don't know which ones are and which ones are not. And so what we're saying is come check it out. And I think there, I've accepted a lot of, I've taken a lot of those red pills myself. So, but that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily right. But I think that people owe it to themselves to look at other realities out there, especially if they affect their lives at a deep level. If that is true, there's probably some motive for an institution or a class of people to confuse you on reality because they can exploit you through your belief systems. So that's what the Red Pill is all about, and I'm inviting everybody to come check it out. It's on the internet right now. It's the redpillexpo.org. Redpillexpo.org. And you can see our speakers. I'll be one of the speakers. We have a lot better speakers there than myself. And you can see where they are. We're adding them every day right now. And the event is held in Hartford, Connecticut this year. We give all the guys on the East Coast, the guys and the gals on the East Coast, a chance because we've always had it in the West Coast before. So Hartford, Connecticut in June 7, 8, and 9.
Well, excellent. Excellent. And you've got an organization which I think is sort of aiming to change the world that people can join as well, I think.
Well, to change the world, organization to change the world. Yes, I guess that's a good summary of it. Sounds grandiose, but that's really what it's all about. To change the negative parts of the world. There are a lot of beautiful things in the world we don't want to change. We want to preserve them from the what I call the pee-pee class. The pee-pee class out there is real. Those are the predators and the parasites. There is a definite percentage of the population, I don't know what it is, but somewhere in that 12 to 15%. They're either parasites or predators that they want to live off of us. And they do not want us to understand. They want us to believe their narrative. They want us to buy into their system so they can exploit us. They want us to buy their expensive drugs, to think that the only way we can stay healthy rather than just eat some herbs that are practically free. And just to give that as an example, you know. So, our organization is called freedomforceinternational.org. And it's based, the reason it's Freedom Force is because we find that most of the things that we are blocked from doing in our lives that we want to do, the thing that blocks us is the lack of freedom of choice. We are not allowed to do the things that we think are best for us because there is some authority telling us, no, you can't do that. And usually they say, you can't do it because it's in your own good. It's for your own good, you understand. We want to protect you from those cancer quacks. So you can't use amygdalin because it's not good for you. It's got cyanide in it, you know, that kind of thing. So we found that the common denominator to all of the blocking of all the dreams and goals and aspirations of people on the planet is almost always some tyrannical system like a government telling you there are laws that prevent you from doing that and you can't do it for your own good. And what we say is that get rid of those restrictions. Let us decide what's for our own good. Because as long as we give that power to somebody else, there will be the predators and the parasites who reach in and become part of the government. They'll either buy it with their money or they'll just move into it and take it over. And now they are dictating how we have to lead our lives. So we find that the common denominator is that we need freedom of choice, and that's why we call it Freedom Force International. And it touches all aspects, whether it's money or health or education, anything you can possibly think of where we don't think that what's going on in the world is really the best way to do it. If we want freedom to pursue another channel, we have to get behind the goals that we have in Freedom Force International. And that, by the way, is the sponsor of the Red Pill Expo. And that's the connection between the two.
And how confident do you feel that actually the good people of the world, perhaps by changing currencies on the parasites, with perhaps cryptocurrency. I mean, do you think it's possible that perhaps overnight, that if enough people, let's say one was able to hack into millions of computers and say, this morning, we're going to change currencies, and governments won't be able to pay the armies anymore, we'll pay the armies double not to do it. Do you think there could be a radical change?
Well, I think there could be a radical change, but I don't think that's the one.
No.
Because I think, first of all, it couldn't happen overnight. The mechanism is not in place. Secondly, the people of the world would probably not approve of it because they would think it was some kind of an act of terrorism. So it's not going to happen that way. But
no.
Profound change is possible if enough people, the tipping point in any society, understands that there's a need for monetary change. Right now, most people don't understand that there's a need.
Yes.
That's our monetary system. It's not very good, but that's all we have. And besides, the government is in charge of it, and we can trust the government, right? So who else is going to run? You're going to trust it. Trust it to the bankers? We don't like the bankers. What they don't know is that the bankers are actually controlling it through the governments, because that's how they buy politicians
yes.
who pass the laws. But anyway, they don't see that. So, yes, I do believe that profound change is possible, but first comes this understanding phase, this education phase. That at Freedom Forest International, that's what we're involved in, is that educational stage. And at the Red Pill Expo, it's that realization, that cracking of the shell, the taking of the red pill. Get rid of the illusion first, and now you can see what needs to be done. So it's all part of our plan. It can be done. If we didn't think it could be done, we would just say, oh, well, it's all over. Let it happen. But no, we don't believe that. We can change it.
Okay, well, I'm very pleased that you're optimistic. That's wonderful. And it's been fantastic talking to you.
Well, Clyde, thank you for inviting me. I'm sure this went longer than you had anticipated, but you get me off on these topics, I can't really stop.
Well, you know, I know you're busy, otherwise I'd be very happy to talk to you for the next 5 hours.
Well, I might go along with that too, but you're right, I got a couple of appointments to catch here. So, thank you.
Good. Thank you very much.
All right. All right.